Good afternoon and welcome to Connect the Dots, your show brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Your host today is Lori Hoyt. The guests are Jane Maskey, Ruth Zalf, and if he makes it, Francis Coyle.
Okay, and that was Tana Hartman, co-hosts, and also she's working the board today. Dick Paddock is off at another meeting. We're happy to be here. And our guests today have all come back from Washington, last week, there for Occupy Washington. We talked about whether it had a particular name, and I guess it's all part of October 2011. And this was planned even before the spontaneous protests that started on Occupy Wall Street, which have mesmerized and inspired the whole country. So we're very excited that our guests came today and are going to talk about their experience in Washington and their impressions. And that'll be the show, along with some announcements. We're going to start off with Jane Maskey, one of our Wilb sisters. Jane, good afternoon.
Welcome
to Wilb's radio show.
Thank you.
Glad you're here. And I remember you telling me that this was your first time to go protest in Washington for many years. Maybe you can...
I will talk about that,
yeah.
Okay, going off to Washington, D.C. to occupy Washington, I had questions about what I'd find there. I knew the first occupation was on Wall Street, where people were protesting corporate greed, golden parachute retirements, joblessness, foreclosures. The Washington demonstration was more than that. People were angry, frustrated, and deeply upset that the needs of the American people were not being met in many areas, and that no one was listening to us, nor doing anything to improve the serious weakening of the fabric of our life in America. A woman walked by with a placard with a photograph of her husband who had been killed in Afghanistan. An elderly lady held a sign questioning where Social Security and Medicare were going. Veterans Against the War were there in force, reminding us of the tragedies of the Vietnam War, Iraq, and now Afghanistan. Children held signs about Medicare and Medicaid and the cuts that educational systems have had. A young man carried a ball and chain representing the massive debt he incurred for his college education. It was a large, eclectic crowd representing the hurt, sadness, and anger of people whose cries were falling on deaf ears. Hopefully, other occupations will multiply, and our so-called representatives will respond in an aggressive, positive manner to those whom they are to represent. Natural resources being ignored due to the industrial greed. Innocent people being killed in wars we shouldn't be involved in. Mammoth amounts of money being spent in Afghanistan while Americans suffer. I was a student at George Washington University 41 years ago when I stood in Lafayette Park across from the White House protesting the war in Vietnam. Thursday, I stood in Lafayette Park protesting the war in Afghanistan. Where will this end?
Oh, Jane, that was good. That was really good. Did you want to say any more? I know you have to leave early, but did you? Is it okay? Am I turned on? Okay. Just want to be sure that the sound is okay. Jane, that was really, really good, and I know you have to leave early, and I just wondered if there's anything else before you have to leave that you wanted to mention about going there or whatever.
I think I was overcome by emotions a couple of times while I was there because the crowd was very orderly, but there was this intense emotion of our government having failed us.
Mm.
The people that we voted for are not paying attention. The media is not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
We're crying and no one's hearing. And I am gratified. I left hopeful because I had heard that there are many more of these demonstrations that are taking place all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this kind of a movement can make some change. I really do. I went there kind of pessimistic, but I left optimistic and feeling stronger about things.
Well, that's one of the most encouraging words I've heard in a long time. And I think hopefully all of us are regaining some sense of possibilities with this movement that it seems to be, you're right, burgeoning all over the country. So feel free to stay, but if you have to go, we understand. Bye-bye. Come back. And then we'll turn to Ruth Salf, who is also one of our Will sisters, who also was on that van going to Washington. Let's see, you went down the day before.
I went down on Wednesday and returned on Sunday.
Yeah, so you were there more than a few days.
Right.
Got a good sense of what was going on.
I feel the hope is with the young people.
Mm-hmm.
They were there en masse. And it was a group of people, Hispanic, a lot of African-American people, which is so very, very important. And there were many things going on, but much of what happened was based upon consensus. This was a democratically run event. Every evening at 7:30, we were asked to pull our chairs up around toward the stage and ask who would like to be the person who is going to be the leader of the group and who would like to help out. And if you wanted to be the point person, fine. And then we took a number of people who would ask questions, and everyone had an opportunity, and we did have microphones, and we passed them around the group. We also asked people if they would like to be, as in New York, where everything is repeated, the people's microphone. And so we did that part of the time. But we made decisions as to what to do at night. What were the police going to do? We had a permit until Sunday at 10 p.m. And most of the people said, we are going to remain. This is an occupation. This is our park. We pay taxes. We have the right to come together and speak our mind, articulate our needs in the Constitution, free speech, freedom of assembly. And we were assembling. Well, the police were, we were told that the police would come around at 2 a.m. and awaken us if we were asleep because we weren't permitted to sleep in the park. Well, I had a place to go to sleep, but I slept out in the park one night. I brought my sleeping bag. And it was interesting because we were told the police would come around 2 a.m. and we would have to get up out of our sleeping bags. Well, some of us did and some of us didn't. Some had
tents. Did the police come? Did the police come?
Well, the funny thing about the police, they came, they didn't bother anybody. Then we were told that some police say they're going to come at 2 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, at 6 a.m., but you can't always rely on what the police tell you. They may tell you one thing and not do it based upon their time schedule or what their orders are. But on Saturday night and Sunday night, people stayed over and they had said, we are going to occupy this space until we are heard, until some of our demands are met. And the whole point of this is to raise the awareness of people in Washington, people who work, the people who are coming to our capital from all over the world. You hear a lot of Japanese people and Chinese people and German and French being spoken because this is a place people come to visit. And one of the places where we were asked, would you like to march around to the Air and Space Museum? And many of us decided, yes, we were going to go. So there were probably 300 people. And we all walked with the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution, this giant, giant cloth in several sections that we were carrying.
Wow.
And it was the preamble to the Constitution. And we carried it, and we went over to the Air and Space Museum. Now, when my boys were little, we went to the Air and Space Museum, and we saw the Wright Brothers airplane hanging up there. Now they have a drone exhibit there. And what we had decided to do was to go in there and get to speak with the people who were there to see the exhibit and talk to them about what drones actually do. That drones are unmanned vehicles, and that they are controlled from a distance very far away, like in Florida or Nevada, and they drop bombs. They kill innocent people because many people don't know anything about this. Well, we had several people go in with a banner probably 30 feet or 36 feet long. And they brought it in, and they went up to the second or third floor, and they hung it over the railing.
Wow.
And it said something like, end the war, bring our war dollars home, something like that. And then there was someone from a very, very right-wing magazine who had decided he was going to infiltrate the group and get in there and make trouble. And so he was very proud of what he did. He went in there, and what happened is he got behind the guards, and there were other people who were trying to get in. And the guards, I don't know if they're official park guards who are well-trained or whether they were hired to come and guard the place and were not well trained. But they got very flustered and took out pepper spray and sprayed about 45 people who were in there.
Oh.
And several of our people were pepper sprayed quite harshly. And they locked the museum. So nobody could go in. Finally, our people were released around the back of the museum, and one person was held. So the next day...
What day was that, Ruth, that happened?
That was on Saturday.
Okay.
I believe it was Saturday, Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
And...
Was the person who was held, was that the instigator, or was that one of...
No, it was one of our people who was held. And then the instigator was so proud of what he had done that he said, well, I caused a lot of trouble, and they closed up the museum. But...
Said this
it
where?
It is really very, very odd that he was so proud of infiltrating, causing trouble. Many people were pepper sprayed, and he was very happy about it.
But he was not arrested.
He was not arrested.
So he was publicly bragging.
He was publicly bragging the fact that he got away with it. But
so much for ethics.
Well, this whole business of greed is a matter of ethics.
Yes, it is.
And morality, which our government and our Wall Street tycoons do not have. So the question is, will we wake up before it's too late? The insanity of running America on corporate greed, political corruption, and the complicity of the media. And it is a complicit media because you cannot hear what is going on in the local media very frequently. And when you do, they downplay the most important parts of what people are trying to say. That we are doing this in a democratic fashion. We are nonviolent. We take an oath to nonviolence. We believe in the democratic process. We believe in helping one another. And we believe that there can be a different way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in a letter to a friend in the movement, something that was said, and it was, if we permit excesses of wealth for a few and enduring poverty for many, we shall create a social explosiveness and a demand for revolutionary change. Now, who do you think said that? Some crazy revolutionary?
Okay.
No, it was Dwight D. Eisenhower who said that. Dwight D. Eisenhower. We shall create a social explosiveness and a demand for revolutionary change. And this is exactly what the people are asking for.
Yeah.
A change. Right now, we live in a corporate, military, industrial, corporate state.
Another wonderful thing said by Dwight D. Eisenhower, that phrase, I think it was the first time it was used that I know of anyhow, and that it's come down to us all, and we all know what it stands for. So Dwight, a staunch Republican, by the way, and I think everybody knows that, had some really clear ideas about how important democracy is in this country, how important the values that we talk about are to be cherished. So thank you, Ruth, for that other phrase that is not as well known that he said.
Right.
That explosive.
He said, beware of the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a military-industrial Wall Street complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst of it is that Wall Street produces nothing. All they do is move money back and forth across mm-hmm. the globe.
Mm-hmm.
So what is happening here in this country, this struggle is a global struggle.
Yes, it is.
There are actions taking place in London. And there will be more things going on in London, and some Americans will be going over there too, as Floridians are going to Wall Street, and Wisconsinites have come to Washington, D.C. Now, things started up in Wisconsin.
And also in London, because
yeah.
they've had a drastic cuts in their social programs, and the people have been out in the streets there with a pretty brutal crackdown by Cameron's government. So this is, you know, and the whole thing, there's a crisis in Europe. You're right, this is a global financial and social policy crisis that is happening in, I don't know about the Scandinavian countries, I think they've been doing pretty well, but maybe not. Okay, Ruth's got information here. But you're right, it is a global crisis. And I heard just a few days ago that it's already spread to 1,000 towns and cities in this country, and I'm sure the number has increased by now. That was 3 or 4 days ago. So I think that it's hit a nerve, and that's why we're so glad that you're here and keep You have more to tell us,
Yes. Exactly. It has hit a nerve, mm-hmm. and there is anger, and that's why they're saying, we are the 99%, and pointing to the people on the streets, you are part of the 99%. The 99% of the people have approximately 7% of the wealth.
Oh.
1% of the people have over 43% of the wealth. 19% of the people have 50% of the wealth. So when you talk about 19 and 1%, 20% have 93% of the wealth. So people are feeling it.
Yes.
People are feeling it very, very harshly. And they're saying, I'm not going to take it anymore. But the big thing is, we are peaceful. We want to be heard. There was a group that went to the Senate office building today to be heard.
In
and
Washington.
Many were arrested in Washington, D.C. today. And the important thing is that people understand that the nature of this struggle is inevitably, unavoidably, indivisibly global. We don't have the luxury of thinking that it's domestic politics. We don't have the luxury of thinking that there's such a thing as a middle class. There is no such thing as a middle class anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the poor, and you've got the rich, and you have the exceptionally rich.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not want to pay their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying is, pay your fair share. And when they come back and say, you people don't pay taxes, that is a farce. We pay taxes on our property, on our cars, on our food, on everything we buy, on our clothing, on our
whatever.
You can't buy a thing without paying tax. Of course, on our fuel, on our electricity, on our gasoline.
On our telephone. So this, we don't pay taxes, yeah. Well, you know, I think for most of us, and I know I include myself, we've had so many years where things seem fairly stable. During the Great Depression with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, saving capitalism by instituting, and that's what he really did. He because they were so afraid of revolution because of the 1917 Russian Revolution. Revolutionary fervor was around the world. The labor movement was gaining strength in this country. So when the Great Depression happened, there was a lot of anxiety about what was going to happen with all these people out of work, with hunger. And Franklin Roosevelt did great things, but it essentially saved capitalism from what could be maybe socialism or communism, whatever they were afraid of, because he instituted really terrific reforms, because capitalism unchecked is predatory and brutal. So he instituted the reforms that made it much more spreading the wealth around better than it had been, so that we developed, after the Second World War, a very strong middle class. And for many, and I didn't realize this till recently, before that, about every 20 years, there was a financial crisis in this country.
That's right.
You know? And because there was not the kind of regulation, and then it would be a mess, so many people would suffer, and then it would start up again. So there was this cycle. 1890, it went on and on, 1870, 1890. So when he instituted Social Security, when they started the jobs program that was a real jobs program, the WPA, the Works was
Project,
a, Project
Administration.
Yeah. And then they had another jobs program for artists and painters. And they had an environmental jobs program where young men were out planting. We had had, remember, you hear about all the topsoil blowing mm-hmm. away during the great dust storms of
yep.
the 20s? Well, they planted millions of trees. They just did wonderful things. You can go anywhere if you ever go camping and hiking, and you can see some roads or buildings or little stone protection so that there's not erosion, and there'll be little signs built during the Depression by the Works Project, WPA. And so they did many good things. And then he started to pull back. Things were going so much better. He started to pull back on his stimulus, and things started sliding again. And then the Second World War came along. And then another great boon that...
Everybody had jobs.
Well, that they did the first GI Bill. Because veterans were always treated shabbily in this country. The veterans from the First World War had been promised a bonus, and they had the great march and protest in Washington years after the First World War, when things were so desperate, asking for their little bonus. And they had a tent city then. And
that's right. That's right.
MacArthur. Yes, they had a tent city, and they formed a whole like libraries
community.
And community. And when it got so embarrassing, the government sent out General MacArthur. Remember him? And they went in with bayonets, set fire to the tents, and beat up these veterans from the First World War who were only asking for what had been promised them. So yeah, history is very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the regulations about on banks, the regulations on all kinds of things that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had some wonderful advisors, unlike our present president,
mm-hmm.
who had the very guys who had created the problem.
Trying to solve it.
Supposedly trying to solve it. But all those things kept this country on a much more even keel. And the GI Bill educated a lot of those veterans so that they moved up into the middle class. Kids who came from farms who hadn't had much of a chance in the world, they became college educated. And that opened up jobs for the rest, for those who to become auto mechanics. So there was jobs. And this was 30 years of reasonable prosperity. It was a few ups and downs, but none of the highs and lows that we've now experienced for 30 years until Reagan came in 1980 and started tearing apart, and that's what they're still trying to do,
yeah.
Tear apart the fabric of those regulations and our Social Security and all the things that have kept this country reasonably, not perfectly, but reasonably fairer than it had been before. So that I just wanted to get that little bit of history in there so we know what we're dealing with now. Which is important. And what happened as it started being torn apart, people started with this bubble. It's not just a lot of poor people getting houses that they shouldn't have been able to afford. What it was equity loans, where a lot of the middle class, as things became tighter, as their wages have been stagnant now for, what, about 20 years, Donna? Something like that.
Quite a while.
The middle class wages have been stagnant. Productivity has gone up. Wages have not. And what people did was borrow on their homes in order to kind of keep being able to try to send their kids to college, in order to be able to try to keep the kind of lifestyle that we've gotten used to. And then the bubble burst, and now we're all those equity loans and losing your job, all these so a lot of the people going into foreclosure were not what the media tries to paint as those poor people who should never have gotten a loan in the first place. No, they were the solid middle class who had what they thought were reasonably secure, good jobs, and thought they could pay pay off these equity loans because things kept going up. So there's been the great screwing of the middle class that is now, the middle class is more and more beginning to realize, as the rug has been pulled out from underneath us, getting some inkling of what's happening. People still don't, a lot of times, know who to blame or what to do. But it sounds like with these protests that people are trying to get it together and do that kind of public education that's been long overdue, that the media does not do, the government has not done.
Yeah.
So back to you, Ruth. I just wanted to set up, that kind of context of what we're struggling with.
Yeah, well, history will teach us a great deal if we learn from it. I'd like to share some things that Howard Zinn said.
Okay.
He said, if Occupy Wall Street and its sister protests across the country are to be successful, we must do more than grow in numbers. We must be prepared to take on the media itself. Otherwise, this movement will fizzle. And that explains why the situation differs from the Arab Spring. We're fighting against a system of corporate bureaucracies, representative assemblies, and laissez-faire finance that is indifferent to the ordinary citizen, but which also creates and perpetuates an illusion of democracy and opportunity.
Yes.
So people think, oh, we have a democracy. It's not like in Europe where they put your foot down on
in
you,
where?
Like in Egypt.
Oh, you
in
mean
Egypt
in,
and,
yeah.
and in the not in countries mm-hmm. of the Middle East.
The Middle East.
So in that way, it's different than the Arab Spring. However,
go ahead, finish that quote, and then we go to a station break. Okay.
The media has a great deal of control over the minds of people.
Yes, it does. We're going to do a station break, and we're going to come back to Ruth. And I just want to make a couple of announcements. That this Saturday, we're speaking about Occupy Washington, Occupy New York. This Sunday, I know there was Occupy Chapel Hill, Occupy Durham, and Occupy Raleigh. I don't know about the others, but I do know that this Saturday, Carrboro and Chapel Hill, listen up, that there will be Occupy Chapel Hill and Carrboro downtown at Peace and Justice Plaza. That's in front of the old post office on Franklin Street at 10:30 this Saturday. So if you want to support this movement to get our country back to the people, to get the middle class and all of us sharing in the wealth, because this is still one of the wealthiest countries. So come out Saturday and keep tuned, because I'm sure there'll be other places and other times. And I think this will be going on at least every Saturday. So 10:30 this Saturday, and stay tuned. I'm sure it'll be every Saturday for a while. And do you want to...
Well, I just want to say something about tonight. We'll be talking more about this tonight at Balance and Accuracy in Journalism. That is 106 Purefoy Road in Chapel Hill at the Community Church of Chapel Hill, Unitarian Universalist. And turn out, because Mikhail Osterweil, who took her PhD here at UNC and has been studying populist movements, will be there along with a number of other people to talk more about this issue, about the other 99% and these demands to basically take back our country and to share the wealth more equitably. The other things that announcements we have are the Orange County Public Library book sale takes place Friday, October 14th through the 16th, which is Sunday. The Orange County Main Library, 137 West Margaret Lane in Hillsboro. The Friends of the Orange County Public Library sale will include hardcover books for $1 each, paperbacks 50 cents, DVDs $1. And on Friday, members-only preview sale from 4 p.m. p.m. to 6 p.m. The preview sales limited to Friends members only, but those who are interested can become a member at the door. And on Saturday the 15th, the sale will be open to the public from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday is bag day. You can fill a bag of books for just $4, and bags will be provided. And the sale's open to the public from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m.
And, Tana, I think we should remind our listeners that we are coming to you courtesy of our local low-power radio station, WCOM-FM-LP. And if you're having trouble with your reception, because we are a low-power station, if you're near your computer, you can stream us live at WCOMFM.org. And that this particular program is being brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, affectionately known as WILF. And I'm Lori Hoyt, your co-host, with Tana Hartman, co-host.
Filling in for Dick Paddock today.
At the board.
We are underwritten by the Internationalist Bookstore. It's a wonderful resource. They are located on Franklin Street. I don't know the exact number.
It's 405 West Franklin.
405 West Franklin.
West Franklin Street. And our guest today, we started off with Jay Maskey, who made a lovely presentation and had to leave for another meeting. And we are, our main guest right now has been one of our favorites, Ruth South, who's back from Washington, there for half a week, part of the Occupy Washington protest, it's also called October 2011, because what they are planning and hoping that all through this month, people will be going, some for a day, some for a few days, some for a week, and some for the whole month, if not longer, starting what they've started, the Tent City.
Yes, this is starting an occupation of Washington and of Wall Street and other sites around the country.
Would you like to sing with me?
Well, I'm not quite prepared, but we may do that by the end of the show.
Well, I want to make one more, because there are more announcements they've asked us to make.
Go
here.
Ahead.
One is this Saturday, the NC Friends of Safe Passage will hold their second annual 5K race walk fundraiser in Southern Village, starting at 9 a.m. This event supports Safe Passage in Guatemala City, which cares for 550 children and their families who live around that city's garbage dump. Mm. And the Safe Passage helps to provide nutrition, education, health care, and hope for those who live in extreme poverty. There are lots of activities this weekend for the whole family, including a bounce house, face painting, crafts, and a mini race, music, and prizes. To register, go to sportoften.com. That is sportoften.com. Okay. And then the last one is Rock for Reproductive Rights, also on Saturday, starting at 8 p.m. at Motor Co. in Durham. Toshi Reagan and Big Lovely will headline the Rock for Reproductive Rights benefit concert. And the music spans rock, blues, R&B, country, folk, spirituals, and funk. She's played live with Elvis Costello, Annie DeFranco, Dar Williams, Liz Wright, and her mother, who is Sweet Honey in the Rock co-founder, Bernice Johnson Reagan. Durham's Humble Tripe will open. The concert will benefit IPAS, an international reproductive health rights organization. And for information, go to www.ipas.org. And now we're back to Lori Hoyt and Ruth South.
Okay, and I have one announcement that I almost forgot. And that is all this week, the Stone Center here at the University of North Carolina has been honoring Franz Fanon, F-A-N-O-N, the 50th anniversary of his death, but also of the publication of his iconic book, The Wretched of the Earth, which deals with poverty and colonialism and its effects on so many peoples on this earth, The Wretched of the Earth. So we're going to have, you can check with the Stone Center of the university, because they've had several programs, but we're hosting have made arrangements for a special program at 1 o'clock on Friday at the Stone Center. And for further information, if you're interested in going, please call Miriam Thompson at 919-370-4114. 370-4114, 1 o'clock this Friday at the Stone Center. And now I think we got our announcements hopefully done, and we're back to Ruth Self.
Well, we've got great media here. Unfortunately, around the country, people are brainwashed by the media. And maybe it's good at the beginning that there's a blackout of news, because initially there wasn't any coverage the first couple of days. But now they are beginning to talk about what is going on. If the establishment did not feel threatened, it would have been reporting on the protests. So the media blackout appears to have been a deliberate effort to trivialize the protests. But now, as the numbers get larger and larger, they can't refuse to cover what is happening. So what they're doing is they're beginning to discredit the protesters.
Yes, have you heard
and
this?
Calling us names and ragheads and
sarcastic
things, and to drown out our talking points. And at first they say tut 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 about us, and now they're saying we're un-American. Well, we are the most American people who are using our constitutional rights to speak up, speak out, and say we are not pleased about what is happening in our democracy when large corporations can buy our politicians by giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to politicians of both parties, so that their message will be heard.
Yeah, I think they're starting. Some of them are starting to be a little more respectful, but I understand the first couple of days they interview somebody with a clown face on, and then they interviewed somebody who had a camera from Fox, you know, about what was going on at the protest. So they were certainly trying to trivialize, be a little sarcastic, because I said they don't have a clear demand. And no matter what the protesters said about, you know, these are many demands, and it's inclusive, and, you know, trying to get as many people under the umbrella as possible, coming from the environmental groups, the anti-poverty groups, the tax groups, all the many, many people who take a piece of the overall problem and are trying to address some change in this country, they would just sort of make fun of it. But at least a few of them now are, I heard a reasonably good report on the Jim Lehrer NewsHour on public television. But, of course, the best one is still Amy Goodman. But anyhow, Ruth, back to you.
Well, that's true. When you start rocking the boat, you start getting reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying is the discussion is meant to say that the protests are unpatriotic, or the people who are doing the protests are unpatriotic. Why are they doing this? Because we're challenging the entire system.
Yes.
The political system, the economic system, and the social system, because we recognize that the system is so badly broken that it cannot be redeemed at the ballot box, because when you go to vote, they make it very difficult for certain people to vote, or the machines break down and people can't vote, or they reduce the number of days you can vote,
mm-hmm.
or they make you have identification so mm-hmm. students can't vote. And many other ways to reduce the number of people who vote if they think they're going to be voting Democratic.
You know, I just heard that one of the things they are allowing, and I can't remember what state is using it, wouldn't surprise me if it were Texas, but they are accepting handgun licenses, but they are not accepting university IDs. So it's okay for gun owners to vote, for students.
So you can use your ID as a registered owner of a weapon.
Handgun, yes. Concealed handguns, no less.
Uh-huh. I wonder, Tana or Ruth, do either of you have like a website about, or maybe is it just www.occupynewyork that you can find more information?
You can go, actually, you can just Google Occupy Wall Street, mm-hmm. or Occupy Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let me look.
Or maybe October 2011.
October 2011.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that would, because we always try to tell our listeners ways that you can, if you're interested in what we're talking about,
yes,
or would like to
October2011.org.
Okay. So, and I also just wanted to say, if you want to know more about the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, you can go to www.trianglewilp.org, and WILP is WILPF. So please check us out. We also are very inclusive and are all volunteers, and we'd love to have you come to our meetings. Are open to anybody, and we're a warm and friendly bunch. So, and we try to be a very well-informed group. So just to put that out there on the airwaves. So, Ruth, you had some quotes, or did we go through them all?
Well, no. A lot of people say, well, do you think that the system is broken? And I say, no, it's not broken. It's not broken for the corporatists. It's not broken for the international corporations. It's not broken for Wall Street. It's going just exactly as they would have it operate,
mm-hmm.
for their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be all of us out on the streets saying, we will have no more of this.
So it is broken for the 99%, but functioning only too well.
Only too well for the 1%.
For the 1%.
But part of this business about attempting to change the way people think, there's always the Horatio Alger story. You, mm-hmm. too can become wealthy. Just work and follow my lead,
mm-hmm.
and you can become a wealthy person, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a rigged system.
Not in a rigged system, exactly. So besides saying we are a bunch of ragheads and we don't know what we want, coupled with that is the effort to discredit us. The authorities will begin to use intimidation,
mm-hmm.
naked intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
This has begun in a small scale already.
Okay.
In New York, quite a bit.
Yes.
And in Washington, somewhat. But it's going to intensify.
Of course, it backfired. It backfired in New York when they lured protesters on the Brooklyn Bridge,
right.
and then threw nets over them, and arrested 700 of them. That's what brought a lot more people out on the streets.
Exactly.
That was what. That was pretty into the first week or so. It was a pretty horrific story.
Yes.
One of the largest mass arrests, I think, in our history.
And
I don't have TV, and I don't listen to any of the corporate media. I get most of my stuff either from
that was
Democracy.
From Amy Goodman.
I missed it.
Yeah.
I missed it.
I know. Well, it's so much going on. Not one of us can keep up. This program is trying to get some of that information out there. Amy Goodman, who comes out on this station, WCOM, LPFM. It comes out on Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I don't get it.
Because I don't have it. Can't get it on TV. I don't have any cable. But so, you know, so you're just going to have to be creative and check out all kinds of media. But this station is one of the ones that's trying to get all kinds of good information out to you. Our show, but also Amy Goodman and some other
Fortunately, most
shows.
Of these things, I mean, everything virtually is archived, so you can go back and look at it because I can't go on my computer every morning because I have, you know, duties, responsibilities that start at like 6:30 a.m.
And we rely on word of mouth with each other. You know, I'm not on the internet. I just have, every time I hear people moaning and groaning about how many emails they have, I just think, oh, not for me. So this may be the lazy woman speaking, and I apologize. But we do rely on word of mouth, and we tell each other things. And radio is my main source of information.
Well, exactly what I'm saying is what happened there when I say that as the protests get larger and larger, then the threat to the establishment becomes more palpable, and they decide they're going to do some pretty strange things, like arresting 700 people on the Brooklyn Bridge. So what happened there was that they asked the bus drivers to come and get them and bring them to the jail or wherever they wanted to process them. And the bus driver said, oh, no, we're union. We don't do that. We will not do that.
I love it.
See, I missed that part of that story.
That was just terrific.
Yeah.
Because people who are unionized, they realize that they have a responsibility to the rest of the 99%.
Yes.
They could be out of their job.
Well, and the point you're also making, there is safety in numbers. You know, if they try to do that intimidation, that brought that many more people out on the streets the next day instead of intimidating. Because I think people are beginning to realize, if we don't get out there now, when are we? When is the right moment? How far does it have to go?
Well, this is it. The one thing we must know, above all others, if we fail to regard this as a life and death struggle, we will fail.
Yeah.
We will. The other 1% view our demands as life and death, and they will fight back with everything in their arsenal.
They will.
And that's what they're doing, but we are nonviolent.
They have that sense of entitlement, and it's just sort of like during the time it's always the same with Marie Antoinette, you know, let them eat cake. It's just they are totally, I think, oblivious, or actually I don't think they are oblivious. I think they know what they're doing, and I think that they are working very hard to make us like a banana, what we used to call sneeringly, which was unfortunate, but a banana republic, you know, that already so many people are being squeezed on their jobs at our great university. They've laid off so many people. Well, how is the work getting done? Well, it doesn't take rocket science to figure out that those who are still having jobs are being squeezed and asked to work harder and longer and more. And this is what is happening all over the country. You're complaining?
Well,
you are lucky to have a job. And they get what we're going to be so grateful for whatever crumbs they want to throw at us. You know, that American spirit of independence, that American spirit of pride in oneself and the dignity of each one of us is being eroded even when we're not quite realizing it day by day. And before our time is up, I want to throw out a point Ruth, either you or Jane mentioned before the program about, I think it was Jane Maskey, about that young man on public radio who was 24 years old and was out there protesting and said, you know, I have got $120,000 worth of education college debt, and I can't get a job. And at this point, what a lot of people may not realize, and more are going to realize, that, you know, you can declare bankruptcy and get a fresh start if you've gotten into too much debt buying the consumer items that they want us to buy, etc. But if it's a college loan, there is no recourse. And I've heard of them hounding, this is a few years back, hounding somebody who had become crippled and still had these college loans, and he was at this point, you know, in his 40s or 50s, and they were still hounding him for college debts from quite a few years before. So as our young people, it's going to be like the young people in Tunisia and in Egypt who have education and can't get work, who are, you're right, Dwight Eisenhower was right, this is social tinder to start an explosive uprising in this country, and especially if they're coming out loaded with debt and can't even get it off their back. You know, it's just frightening, and my heart is going out to all of us, but especially to young people who always we took for granted there would, you know, be a little harder or a little, in some years than others, but that there were jobs out there, you know, at some point. And now there aren't, and it's very, very scary. And thank you. I want to just thank you, Ruth, and I know some of our Wolf people got a van with 16 of you who went off to Washington. I think there was a bus went from Durham. I wasn't able to go either, but my heart's there, and I'm certainly planning to be out there on Saturday in Chapel Hill. And we want to encourage, before we close, I just want to encourage all of our listeners, and we'd like you'd like to hear your stories. So, Tom, I'm going to turn that over to you.
I was wondering what that was. That must be Lori's phone. I guess so. Well, thank you for listening. You have been listening to Connect the Dots, brought to you by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we are underwritten by the Internationalist Books. And you can go visit their website at internationalistbooks.com. Join us again next week, Wednesday, every Wednesday at 5 p.m. And you are listening to WCOM 103.5 LPFM in Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Thank you, and join us again next week.